Welcome to Labor Radio on KBOO Portland. I am Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Ellie Gilland.
Thank you so much for joining us. We would first just like to give a special thanks and shout out to the Labor Radio Podcast Network for hosting podcasted versions of our show each month. Be sure to check that out at laborradionetwork.org. And you are now tuned into Labor Radio here on KBOO Portland. And right now we're in the middle of our All Thrills, No Frills Volume 4 special programming campaign, which is going on now through April. So we here at Labor Radio encourage you to go check out the list of our specials by going to kboo.fm/ATNF4. We know that there'll be something incredible on there that you will love. So be sure to check that out. So as you're all probably very aware, the Trump administration has begun their crusade against the working class by first attacking federal employees.
And I think, you know, we've talked about how too, right? Typically, these are the easiest group of employees for them to control. And so it starts here, and then the legislation is going to follow kind of in the other realms in terms of private workers. Yeah. So I think, you know, we've talked about it many times on this show, but the federal employees and public employees being the canary in the coal mine in kind of the realm of what is an administration looking to do in terms of its opinions and thoughts around the economy and labor as a whole. Yeah. So speaking to your crusade, the Trump administration has basically announced earlier this month that they will be stripping rights from TSA workers. The Department of Homeland Security, or the DHS, under the Trump administration, ended collective bargaining rights for approximately 47,000 Transportation Security Administration, or TSA employees, including transportation security officers. Now, we've talked about this a lot, right? Many states in the U.S. have different laws when it comes to public workers, which we'll touch on more in a second. But again, this is a very clear script and playbook, an anti-unionization playbook, really, in terms of the Trump administration going after the TSA. Now, moment to moment, this isn't going to affect every single TSA employee. However, the loss of union protections and the ability to negotiate collectively is a massive blow that I think, you know, we've talked about a ton of times on this show. Without the ability to collectively bargain, the TSA employees may face job security issues, right? They're going to probably start laying people off to increase efficiency, quote unquote. And also they'll probably face lower working conditions, right? Yeah. One of the primary reasons that the DHS said they made this change was to create more agile and efficient operations within the TSA, and specifically citing the time that TSA employees spent on their unionizing efforts, in particular calling out like union officials who also worked within the agency. This is kind of one of the most lazy arguments that we've seen. I actually think with the right lawyers, you can probably put together a better argument than this. And, you know, because there's no way to really stop it other than trying to get the courts involved, I think they're just throwing it out on the line.
Yeah.
In addition to that, the American Federation of Government Employees, or the AFGE, obviously strongly opposes this decision and represents the TSA. And they've actually already filed a lawsuit against the DHS claiming that the termination of collective bargaining is unconstitutional. We're not going to dive into all of the benefits of being able to collectively bargain, like we've talked about. It's basically at the heart of every show that we do here. But I think it's important to call out again that this is a massive, massive thing that the Trump administration is doing and could, in theory, like we talked about earlier, represent their kind of longer term goals for the private sector.
Yeah. And it's interesting, too, that they've chosen the TSA as one of like the major groups of federal employees to go after here, because, I mean, presumably the calculation was that, like, well, no American loves the TSA. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not like the postal workers, or they're not like parks employees. Like, they are, you know, TSA. They're the people that make you take your shoes off when you're getting on an airplane. But the reality is, in a similar way to when they fired or, you know, gutted the FAA, right, when the administration came into office, like, this has a direct effect on our transportation safety. Mm-hmm. You know, a thing that most Americans have to do at multiple times every year, you know, travel through airports, get on planes. We're already seeing the FAA gutting, and we're already seeing planes fall out of the sky. Now we're going to see potentially more dangerous people getting onto planes as well.
Yeah. Well, yeah, to your point, I mean, the ramifications of this aren't just the ability to collectively bargain, right? Yeah. We talked about working conditions, you know, kind of what you just talked about. But again, it's every industry. Like, hiring is very difficult right now. Basically, since kind of COVID and kind of workers starting to stand up for themselves, a lot of people are not taking a lot of these jobs that they used to. And so, you know, when you do something like this and you reduce the recruitability of an industry, I mean, I think we're going to see massive ramifications, and obviously we'll continue to update as things happen. You know, we're taking away the ability to collective bargain kind of opens the door for a bunch of possibilities. Yeah. And we haven't seen those transpire yet, but obviously it's a massive indicator of what's next.
Yeah. And if, you know, they're claiming that they are doing this to make it more efficient because the workers are spending their time on the job trying to organize the union. Like, that is, as you said, like it would take a you know, any lawyer, yeah, not that much time to dismantle that argument or to come up with a better one on the case of.
Or point to the numerous studies that talk about working conditions and, yeah, increasing efficiency and all of these sorts of things.
Exactly.
So, you could argue that they've kind of muddied the waters with all of the different ways now that you can go to the airport, whether it's CLEAR or TSA, right? We could get into all of that, which, yeah, we won't. But I'm sure there's efficiency that is being gained already by workers being in conditions that make them feel safe, yeah, and able to complete their jobs.
And it's like peace of mind for the traveling public to know that the workers who are doing the screening and making sure that it's just safe people and objects getting onto planes are doing a job because they love it or because they're happy,
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
And not under duress.
And no one will be surprised in 6 weeks when, you know,
yeah,
5,000 to 7,000 TSA employees get laid off or, absolutely, fired by the, yeah, administration.
This is the precursor.
Yeah. And, you know, so that brings us next to the USPS.
Yeah.
That's also under threat from the Trump administration. They're not going as far as removing their ability to collectively bargain, which, again, we've touched on in public realms, is also not as clear cut as you would think, unlike the private sector. But basically, earlier this month, Postmaster General Louis DeJoy announced that he basically would be willing to work with DOGE, or Elon Musk's kind of agency that has been reworked for governmental efficiency, on a cost-cutting plan that seems to be aimed at cutting around 10,000 workers within the USPS. We've touched on the USPS many times on this show. I think it's important to reiterate that, again, they are not a for-profit like agency,
right,
though the way their budget works is very different than other governmental agencies. Mm-hmm. However, they do things like take mail into sections where it is strictly unprofitable to do so,
yeah,
right? Get people medications, right? Get people, if it's a, you know, if it's a voting area that is all remote, right? You know, they're getting mail and postage out there. So again, this is kind of another attack on rights and also on people who are a huge part of this economy, right? If, yeah, we start cutting all of these jobs, the FAA, other parts of the government, we kind of are already in this economic slowdown. These are all massive members of the economy that are spending money every day, yeah, in areas also that typically are not going to have as much economic growth, right? It's not all East, West Coast. This is,
right,
middle of America, places without high growth, high margin industries like tech and things like this. So, yeah, again, kind of just terrifying news for anybody within the government right now or the public sector that's has a great job, right? A decent paying job and has lifted them out from whatever economic place they've been in.
And I think it's important to point out, like you said, that the Postal Service is it's not meant to be for profit. And the reason that it is necessary is because it does go to it serves every mailbox in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not it's, you know, right down the street from a post office or it's incredibly remote. Like, I saw an interesting anecdote that there is a postal worker who rides a mule down into the bottom of the Grand Canyon to serve mail to folks who are living in the camp that's down there. Like, mm-hmm, it would be amazing if you were to find an Amazon worker that were to do that. And in fact, a lot of those companies like Amazon contract to the USPS to make the deliveries of their packages that are to areas that they don't necessarily serve on their own,
yeah,
that are maybe more remote. So, like, this the USPS provides a service not only to the American public, but also to American corporations that are doing that. A lot of people point to as like, well, why would we need the USPS if we just have Amazon?
Yeah.
It's like, well, Amazon uses the USPS to finish the routes that they refuse to run.
Yeah.
So it is a service that, like, people, especially rural Americans, will absolutely feel the pinch on that if they all of a sudden have to drive into the nearest city to get their mail because it won't be delivered to them anymore if,
yeah,
it's privatized.
Yeah, I mean, I for one am going to with open arms accept my $9.99 drone delivery fee.
Right.
That is fast approaching.
Of course.
The other big thing that we want to touch on with this story is just that you combine it with there's a factor of privatization here. Mm-hmm. Both Elon Musk and President Trump have spoke or kind of stoked fears among the labor community around basically talks of privatization of the USPS. And in addition to that, Amtrak. Obviously, we could touch on all of the different things, but we're kind of going rapid fire here through all of the things the Trump administration is doing.
Yeah.
You know, again, I think a lot of the stuff that we touched on applies here in privatization of these things. You know, we just talked about how not all of these things need to be for profit. We're trying right. to get mail. We're trying to get medicine. We're trying to get voting ballots into people's hands. And I think in particular, this privatization aspect is spooking people.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, it is also one of those things that was very clearly laid out in the Project 2025 plans. And it's also just been the end game of conservatives for, you know, 60 plus years is privatizing the commons and making them for profit for the individuals versus a service to the public at large.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's not surprising that this is the step on the path towards privatization or elimination entirely of the Postal Service.
Yeah. Finally, in terms of Trump administration news, obviously, you know, anyone who hasn't had their head under a rock is kind of aware of the trade war that the Trump administration has started with our neighbors and our allies. The stock market is obviously feeling the impact of this as well as business operations, but we want to touch on the kind of human and labor aspect of this as well. Obviously, the increased costs on imported goods not only affect us, like end consumers purchasing them, but also the supply chain itself, and obviously the businesses selling the goods. And again, we like to stay a little bit more focused on the negative impact this will have on employment, but it cannot be forgotten how badly this is kind of actively in real time right now affecting the U.S. economy. These increased operational costs and reduced competitiveness, right? As our, you know, as U.S. goods are cost more in these other areas with the counter tariffs coming in, there's a lot less competition, which is creating a lot less opportunities for employees. And so businesses are most likely going to be downsizing in the near time, resulting in job losses, particularly in sectors that Trump promised to protect. I think, you know, you're going to see in the next few weeks and months here, manufacturing in particular, take hits. And I also want to call out here in particular, while not directly impacted by the tariffs, you combine that with some of the stuff we've been talking about on the show as well around STEM, you know, high skill math and engineering and sciences labor that has basically been attacked by a lot of the predatory removal of getting people in and out of the country and being able to secure green cards. I think labor is in a very dangerous spot right now, both from the manufacturing side and the STEM side. And we've kind of got this economy that not, people are feeling less confident about.
Yeah. And, you know, all that is not even to mention the impact it's having on, I mean, say like, you know, the Trump bread and butter, the American farmer.
That, yeah.
You know, people who rely on having their goods be, you know, sent to Canada or Mexico or other places that are now putting massive tariffs on them in retaliation to what the Trump administration has done. I mean, that... It is just so shocking, not shocking, but it is striking how much the exact, all the people that the Trump administration and that Trump as a campaigner ran on saying they wanted to protect and they were going to help are the people that are being directly hurt by his policies here.
Yep. Yeah. And it's sad to see.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, traditional media is, you know, calling recession the R word and they're throwing it around a lot. But I think what we're seeing is a lot of precursors to such a thing, right? You combine that with a decline in consumer confidence and reduced spending, which again leads to slow economic growth and an affected working class that has less opportunity and less ability to secure jobs at wages that they were seeing previously.
Yeah.
And then the final thing that I want to call out here is just when you combine all of what we just covered with the tax cuts that the Trump administration is planning, we can expect to see even slower economic growth, and you can expect to see the country's debt payments to grow as a percentage against our GDP, right? Because when our GDP doesn't go as high, then our debt payments increase. And I think for all of the blustering and talk around the deficit and the kind of crazy spending that has happened kind of in the earlier parts of this century, which again, I think both sides agree on, we've literally created a recipe for the opposite of that. And I think you'll see with GDP growth slowing, the deficit growing as well.
Yeah. I mean, anyone who is a student of American history would know that President Hoover instituted massive tariffs that led very quickly to the economic collapse and the Great Depression, which, you know, hopefully that's not where we're headed, but it does seem like a very striking rebound or, you know, echoing of that historical event right now.
Yeah. And, you know, with all that being said negatively, we also wanted to talk about kind of what's been being done about it.
Yes, absolutely. And so, yeah, of course, that is, it's a lot of negative news barraging us right off the bat there. And that's kind of maybe the point of what this administration is doing. They're instilling chaos and trying to keep us on our, off balance.
Yeah, individually, these stories are so crazy. Yes. But when you combine them all together, they all kind of feel minuscule next to each other.
But there are some positive things that have happened. We discussed the attack on federal workers, and there's been mass layoffs. But there's actually now a judge has ordered the Trump administration and Elon Musk's Department of Governmental Efficiency, or DOGE, to stop mass layoffs and to reinstate the fired workers. So these mass firings really began in earnest in mid-February and have basically been ongoing ever since, including, up until last week when the Department of Education announced that it would cut about 50% of its workforce. But on Thursday, March 13th, a California federal judge ordered that the Trump administration immediately reinstate tens of thousands of jobs for probationary federal workers who were fired as part of, the DOGE efficiency campaign to essentially gut the federal workforce, which is being done under the guise of, allegedly cutting wasteful spending. But really, it is just a means of breaking the government in order to privatize everything, as we said. This whole process began because Musk's team sent emails to federal workers offering buyouts and demanding that they justify their jobs, even going so far as to say, like, give me, five things that you did each day or something like that. So, of course, that has gotten a lot of attention. But as a response to that, Judge William Alsup ruled that workers must be rehired across numerous federal agencies, including the Departments of Agriculture, Defense, Energy, Interior, Treasury, and Veterans Affairs. And the judge also ruled in favor of numerous plaintiffs that brought the suit against the Trump administration's Office of Personnel Management. Now, this order also prohibits the OPM, the Office of Personnel Management, from advising any federal agency on which employees to fire. And additionally, the judge also is requiring that these agencies provide documentation of compliance to the court. So this is absolutely, this can be viewed as a win, whether or not it is a permanent stay of execution for these workers or not, it is absolutely a win in the right direction here. The plaintiffs who brought this case to the judge against the federal government are the American Federation of Government Employees, or AFGE, as well as the AFL-CIO and several other unions representing thousands of federal workers. They brought the suit in February over OPM's illegal program of terminating employees who are within the first year of their positions or who were recently promoted to new positions within the agency. And AFGE's national president, Everett Kelly, said in a statement that the union is, quote, pleased with Judge Alsup's order to immediately reinstate tens of thousands of probationary federal employees who were illegally fired from their jobs by an administration hell-bent on crippling federal agencies and their work on behalf of the American public, end quote. Now, of course, unsurprisingly, the White House plans to contest this ruling. And in a statement, the White House press secretary, Carolyn Leavitt, said, quote, a single judge is attempting to unconstitutionally seize the power of hiring and firing from the executive branch. The president has the authority to exercise the power of the entire executive branch. A singular district court judge cannot abuse the power of the entire judiciary to thwart the president's agenda. If a federal district court judge would like executive powers, they can try and run for president themselves. The Trump administration will immediately fight against this absurd and unconstitutional order. Now, unshockingly, that is a complete misunderstanding of the, you know, checks and balances, the balance of power that exists within our government. I mean, the president is not a king, he's not a monarch, and he does not have unilateral power to enact his agenda in this manner. But of course, they don't see it that way, and they will, of course, say, you know, speak on it in a way that might convince people who aren't aware of the balance of powers that, that this is an overstep on the part of the judge. But, you know, the in their original complaint from February 19th, the unions who brought the case argued that Congress, you know, controls and authorizes federal employment and spending, and that lawmakers have empowered the federal agencies, not OPM, not the executive branch, to manage their own employees. So OPM's official function really is to administer employee benefits. So it essentially serves as the government's Department of Human Resources and really does not have the constitutional or statutory or regulatory authority to order federal agencies to terminate their employees.
Yeah. To your point about chaos earlier, I think there has been a lot within the U.S. federal government that is understood or agreed upon and maybe not written as clearly as we would like. And I think what's going to happen with this second Trump administration is a lot of things that we took for granted are not actually going to be followed by the administration and are going to basically be pushed against. Right. And he's going to see how far he can take it.
Yeah.
Right. From kind of, not approving Supreme Court justices and getting kind of this off balance kilter that we have in terms of shifted more right. These were kind of, there were rules in which way people acted. And I think in particular, right, like mass firings of low level employees is not something that you typically see, or removing people based on their political affiliation. But also in addition to that, I think this is a, maybe not a prime opportunity, but I think we are going to see the horizon or the frontier of public workers and their rights be kind of brought to the forefront.
Yeah.
You know, during the Biden administration, we talked a lot about the Railway Act that essentially didn't allow train conductors to go on strike and hurt the economy. This is a very old law that got passed by Congress and, you know, made it that way. That was private workers.
Yeah.
But we're also seeing it now here with public workers, right? These are employees and workers that the Trump administration feels like it can control. We didn't cover it, but in the news, a bunch of New York State prison guards got let go because they tried to go on strike, and there was a law, you know, within the New York State that public employees couldn't go on strike. I think this is all going to come to the forefront because these kind of more understood, unsaid boundaries are just being completely pushed by this administration.
And yeah, I mean, of course, it's not shocking that they would go after all these public employees, because the public sector is really the only part of the American economy where there is intense union density. Mm-hmm. I mean, the private sector, there are unions, absolutely, but the majority of workers are not unionized. In the federal government, a large portion of those workers are unionized, and so the strongest unions do exist on the public sector, or in, you know, on the government job side. And so, of course, that would be where they would try and break the labor movement first, is, you know, of course, in the place that they can control, but also the place where there is the most union power, concentrated power in this country. And yeah, it's positive to see that a judge has stood up against them, because it does seem like they are, in the tech parlance, like they're moving fast and breaking things. And by the time, you know, as you said, like there's a lot of the things that we believe in or that we think are instituted are actually just norms and you know, bylaws that people follow, but are not actually codified. And so, you know, the administration can move quickly and do a lot of things that we think maybe should be illegal but aren't technically against the rules.
Yeah.
And then it will take a long time for the justice system to follow up and actually reverse these things. And so they'll have broken a lot of stuff before the regulatory body can fix that.
And we're not talking about servers going down or ad networks not being delivered. We're talking about school lunches not being delivered,
right?
EBT, not getting to families, right? This is like, this is, the government is a gigantic company and it's also not, right? And I think any reasonable person could understand that sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like running the government as a company is just not a correct way to look at what government provides. But even if it was, you know, coming in and acting in this way, firing a bunch of people who have institutional knowledge, is not a great way to run a company. It's not a great way to come in and immediately destabilize the company you've taken over in the first place. So even if that were a proper way to run a government, they are not doing that in the proper way. And we are coming to the end of our program here. But first, I just want to let our listeners know that KBOO is in the middle of our annual All Thrills, No Frills Volume 4 special programming campaign. So right after the show, be sure to go check out our full range of specials by going to kboo.fm/ATNF4. And now here we are to conclude Labor Radio. We will, of course, follow up on these stories. And, you know, as new developments happen, we will touch back on these things. But for now, it is at least positive to look and see that there are judges, you know, pushing back, and that the labor movement is not taking this sitting down, of course. So we will be back with you next month. But thank you so much for listening to Labor Radio. I've been Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gilland.